Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ready to Unload with Cal and Sam Pete, New York Sports Talk radio show and podcast on June the 21st, 2012. Coming to you live from Bayside, New York, Freehold, New Jersey, and Commack, New York. It is time, once again, episode 3.24 on the year, season 3, episode 24 of Ready to Unload with Cal and Sam Pete, the podcast, and we're live. And the thing with the whole mishpucha, we're going to get right into it because I listened to last week, guys, and I was rambling. Terrible rambling at the top of the show. So let's get right to it because it's a podcast. We're here to talk about sports, not have me quote lavish Broadway musicals. Okay? The dawning of the age of Aquarius, all right? The moon is in the seventh house. Jupiter has aligned with Mars. Peace is guiding the planets. Love is steering the stars. It's time for Ready to Unload Aquarius. And without further ado, as I bring the show to a screeching halt yet again, time to introduce the co-host of the program, the Cal from Ready to Unload with Cal and Sam Pete, my partner in crime, my partner in grime, my partner in rhyme, Mr. Brian Calneva, Calpino, Caliente Calneva. Ooh, that's nice. Appropriate for Calneva, too, by the way.
That must be a producer thing.
That must be a by the way, Cal, I got to warn you, PJ's about to produce the heck out of this thing tonight.
I just, you know, hearing him for 30 seconds, I got the sense that he's a little saucy tonight.
He is, he's a little...
There he goes.
Calneva.
There he goes.
Did you ever do any serious research into why I nicknamed you Calneva?
Not serious research.
Did you do any lighthearted research?
I did a little whimsical research.
How did that go?
Well, I know that it's after the hotel on the border of California and Nevada.
Owned by?
Frank Sinatra.
Right, that's right.
I knew that.
Since my nickname was Stevie Hollywood for many years, in our familiar circles, because I'm like Johnny Fontaine.
Mm.
You were a natural when we had to come up with a mafia nickname for you. You were a natural for Calneva.
It's perfect. Now, was there another reason? I didn't get that far in my research. Or was that it?
You mean that wasn't on Wikipedia? That wasn't on your Wikipedia page?
That's as far as it went on my Wikipedia page.
Right. There is no other reason other than we were doing mafia-themed sort of familia-themed names. And Calneva seemed appropriate for you.
And we got the blessing of Big Pauly for that too. So,
well, we did. Yes, all nicknames start and end with Big Pauly, which I've told. I think I've told this story on the air. Maybe we'll tell it later because we have a lot to do. But the great story of how my Uncle Tommy became Big Pauly. It's a fantastic story. So we might have to tell that later on. And then, of course, we all were given our nicknames within the family.
That's a nice teaser, though.
This fake mafia. I teased it nice.
Nice.
I tickled the chorus there a little bit. And speaking of tickling the chorus, let's welcome in the producer of the show. He's actually working tonight, Cal.
Well, he's producing the show.
No, no. Besides, he's double dipping. He's doing double duty.
Oh.
You know why he can do double duty, Cal?
Because he's the best producer in the business.
That's right. Look at this. He's even playing his own intro music. I didn't even have to do it. It's a little low, by the way. Make it a little louder.
You're a little low.
He's not even supposed to be here tonight. Let's welcome to the stage Derek Smoles. He wrote this. No, it's Bishop PJ, Pop Culture Variety. Hi, Peach.
Blessings unto you and Calvi.
Thank you. Are you all prepared to talk about this Joe Madden, Davey Johnson rift and the unwritten rules in baseball?
Davey Jones just passed away, didn't he?
Davey Johnson.
And I wear Steve Madden shoes.
Manager of the Washington Nationals.
That's not even a real team. They play the Globetrotters.
That's correct. That is absolutely right.
There's, nothing gets past him.
He is sharp. There's a lot of hubbub about what went down when the Rays played the Nats the other night. We're going to talk about that in the big unload coming up in a couple of minutes. But, Pete.
Yeah.
What are you doing tonight at IMG?
Oh, it's Olympics fever over here. We're going a little bit crazy, go nuts.
Now I see you on you're on the UVU. It's actually working.
Yeah, you see my halo and everything?
I see the halo. I like the way you've lit this.
Thank you.
You look like you're at the Last Supper.
Well,
it's a little backlit, isn't it?
Right, look at that. Cal, look at that. Right above his head.
Yeah. This is my blood you drink. This is my body.
More with the musicals.
Thank you.
The musicals. You look like Mel Brooks holding up the plate over John Hurd's head in History of the World.
Jude, have you tried the mulled wine?
Leave us be. What? You said what? You said that you wanted Jesus Christ. Yes. What? You said that. It is Olympic fever, and we were gonna do a fun load tonight, Peach. That ties into Olympic stuff. We're gonna save it for the actual Olympics.
Fine.
Because it was about how you can't compare athletes in sports that are judged as opposed to sports that are officiated.
Oh, you know what? That's an excellent topic there.
Yeah, that's going to be hot action when the Olympics starts. We got a great fun load tonight.
I'll be the judge of that.
We got a great fun load tonight.
I see what you did there.
See what he did?
The judge.
Judge Reinhold.
I made sure that was as unfunny as possible.
How about that
comes off unfunny. You got it, boss.
You got it, boss. How about that appearance on Arrested Development by Judge Reinhold?
Judge Reinhold was great.
Take it easy, Judge Reinhold. What was it? William Hung in the Hung Jury? That was the house band? So freaking brilliant. You know what? Hats off to Judge Reinhold, too, for completely... You know,
he's a good sport.
Making fun of himself. Not a good actor, boys. Rated, underrated, overrated. Does Judge Reinhold need to get more work, Cal?
No. I think he gets the appropriate amount of work right now.
You find his workload to be appropriate?
I'll tell you what, though. As far as being self-deprecating and being a good sport, he put Steve Guttenberg to shame.
Well... That's very true. What is Gutenberg's deal? Talk about a guy who, I mean, I'd get you in diner and everything, buddy. Come on though. Let's come with us. You know
is Gutenberg
I mean?
A little bit? Is he a little bit too serious?
I think he's very. I think
he doesn't
Steve
like to be discussed only in terms of Police Academy movies.
That's right.
Or Short Circuit.
I think he takes himself very seriously at this point. That
he thinks who he is.
That's a good one.
Are we going to go with the grandma?
Oh, yeah. Those phrases are the best. Look at him. He's from Hunger. That one.
Like we're around the BS table? with all the gumas?
We're playing a little mahjong and we're saying these things.
Yeah, there's one that I can't say on the air, but it was bandied about quite often about something about her... She thought her crap was ice cream. That was a big one.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah. No, but that's when they were getting a little, you know, raw, working blue.
This one.
Right.
They're always referred to as this one.
This one. Yeah. This one. It's like that scene in Goodfellas when they're having the beauty day, like the spa day at What's Her House, and Karen's like, you know, like her head is spinning or whatever, and all the women are talking. That was like a family party in my family. You know, she's no angel. You always make them out to be such angels. She's not depressed. She's not tired. She's drunk. I'll never forget one of my first actual professional acting gig in New York was a off-Broadway show called Aunt Chooch's Birthday from the makers of Tony and Tina's Wedding, because everybody needs more of that. I think, Cal, you may have even come to see that.
I was at that one.
Yeah, you did. And,
good friend. Couldn't get me to go to that.
No. We were not friends then.
No. And barely friends now.
I would not invite it to your wedding.
So how far have we come, really?
Right. We make fun of each other a lot easier now. That's about
it.
Yeah,
that's all
it is. A lot more open. And one of the women in the cast who played my aunt in the cast is in that scene in Goodfellas. She's a very heavyset woman with dark hair, and she had like three lines.
Oh.
And one of them is the woman is in a house coat every day. Such a great line. And
what is it with the house coat?
My grandmother, that's my everyday recollection. Was cooking with the little house coat, cigarettes in one pocket, tissues in the other.
We refer to it as a shmata.
Is that right?
Yes.
Nice. Now, did your grandmother have a personalized one?
No. Just flowery.
Right. Well, my grandmother had several, but the special occasion one had Irene in script, like it was Laverne on the shoulder. That was the special one. Yeah, she was making meatballs nice when that thing was on.
When did they go away? When did they disappear?
I don't know.
They haven't.
No.
Well, with that said, but I'd like to see like Teresa in one. Like, how do I get my wife to start wearing? What? They're not bad. They're not moo-moos.
Go ahead, you ask her.
My grandmother was a very slim lady.
Well.
Anyway, this woman was in that movie, and she said it was the greatest day shooting of her life, like shooting with Scorsese and stuff. And
I can imagine. Wow.
He was wonderful to everybody there, and it was just like this wonderful day. And she's forever. I was quoting that movie while we were like rehearsing. She's like, "I'm in that movie."
That's pretty cool. Yeah,
that was excellent. Okay. Peach, we're going to need you later because we're going to be casting R.A. Dickey the movie.
I feel like I should be going online and seeing if I can order a house coat. For myself, even.
While we get into the big unload here, why don't you figure out what happened to the smat... What do you call them? Schmatas?
Schmata.
Schmata. That sounds vaguely like Yiddish.
Nah.
That's not.
I'm looking it up. I'll be back on. I'll look it up.
You're very dismissive tonight, Cal. Very dismissive.
Well, it's not. Listen, and there was never a drop of gravy on those things.
No.
With all the meatballs that were cooked, never a drop of gravy.
Never a drop of gravy. How is that possible?
It's unbelievable.
Like I said, when the Irene one was on, the company was coming over.
Does it come smelling like mothballs, or does that happen just in the environment of the house?
It's the Yiddish word for wash clothes.
Oh, so it is Yiddish.
There you go. See? But the Yiddish and the Italian, you know, the Jewish and the Italian, they mix together pretty good.
Kindred spirits, I think.
Yeah, it's the same guilt, different religion.
I apologize for being so dismissive.
It's not. Next question.
You see what I did there? With the guilt?
Not. Right. Good job.
Sorry.
I apologize for being so dismissive. If it was my fault, you know, what can I say? I do sort of feel like you led me to that, but that's okay. That's all right. I'll just be in the corner, you know.
You won't hear from me. You don't hear me complain.
She thinks who she is.
That Gutenberg.
That Gutenberg. He thinks who he is. And we bring it back full circle. Last thing on the Gumaz, though, Cal.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things. My great-grandmother had all the old Italian ladies in the neighborhood, and they weren't related, but they were all called Gumaz.
Okay.
And there was, and some of them were related. They were great aunts or whatever. It was Gumatesi, Guma Rose, you know. All the, and when these women would get together, they, because they were such gossips in the neighborhood in Brooklyn, they all had call signs. So
oh.
Like Gumatesi was WCBS, Guma Rosie was WABC, my great grandmother was WPIX, like because they were always broadcasting the news.
I like that.
So, you know, my uncles and my mom would call them like Guma WCBS, you know. So, yeah, I love that. That's great.
And you thought your family was a lot bigger than it actually was.
Right. That's right. Oh, of course.
Right?
Yeah. Guma Tessie, Guma Rosie, Mike Gumbarez, which just meant he was from Bari, which I didn't know until I was way older. I always thought my grandmother was like, I thought Gumbarez was like an Italian curse. or like, you know, Goomba, like, you know what I mean?
Well, it's the way they say it, too.
Right. Right. My grandmother completely butchering it. And she was saying basically what it meant was Mike the Goomba from Bari, Italy.
Huh.
Uncle Mike Gumbarez, you know him. The envelopes were always nice, Cal. Always nice envelopes.
Crisp.
Did you have one of those? Did you have a great uncle that you would get the envelope and maybe it was $5, maybe it was 10? You never
know. I had an uncle. An actual uncle that did that.
Yeah. Yeah. You never knew what the envelope was going to hold.
No, but it always had something in it. Usually the same thing, like you said, like a $5 bill.
Right. I remember my Uncle Sammy was great for that. He was a great uncle of mine, and we'd always get the envelope.
Right.
And Scott, my brother, and I would come running back like, what do you got? What are we getting this year? Is it a fiver? Just a white envelope, plain, no name on it.
No, nothing on it. Not even a card.
Right. He had about 35 of them in his suit breast pocket. Everybody got the same. Uncle Sammy. As they would say. Maybe that's the... Hey, Gutenberg. Show's for you now.
Why don't you make that louder? Why don't you make that louder?
Are you trying to say it's too loud?
Well, there's no blood coming out of Calvi's ears yet. But I noticed he had to pull the headphones off his head.
What?
Yep.
Huh?
Cal, you are full of it tonight.
Oh, I'm full of something.
You are salty. How was your week? Everything all right?
E&V.
Ooh, it's hot out there.
It's a scorcher.
It's hot.
Don't you want to smack anybody who comes up to you and says how hot it is out, though?
Hey, I hope you fellas are beating the heat out there. Staying cool, I hope.
Hope you're staying indoors. It's hot.
Hydrate.
Hydrate, too. It's hot. All right? It's hot.
Guess you know what? It's summertime.
Yeah, exactly.
This shouldn't be a news flash. It's the first day of summer. It's hot.
Yeah. And by the way, we've had like a ridiculously mild spring. Like we had like one hot day.
Right.
It hasn't been above 90, but for one day until yesterday. I can't believe this summer. I can't take it. It's ridiculous. All right. Time for the big unload here on Ready to Unload. Last week we were going to talk about unwritten rules in sports, Cal. Remember?
I do remember that.
And we left them in the green room. We left that topic in the green room with Tiger Woods and Lindsey Buckingham. We never got to it. We pushed them off the couch.
Well, it worked out because now look where we are today.
Now look what happened. Well, let's get right into this because I've been – since Dr. E-Ray Stad, our buddy, former member of the show, who has moved on.
Well, he's kind of like the producer emeritus or emeritus. How do you pronounce that?
I think it's emeritus.
Emeritus?
I don't know. We would need our current producer to tell us what
right. I don't know if he's going to want to answer a question about the previous producer, but...
Well, that's a little touchy.
A little awkward.
He also has 9 degrees in English and
he
literature.
He would know a lot better than us.
Probably should know that. He's making an obscene gesture to us on the video.
Right. As like you're butchering the English language. Just
yeah.
Move on.
Yeah. Yes, Dr. Eristat is a producer emeritus, and he suggested that we talk about this, this fight between Joe Maddon and Davey Johnson, stemming from the situation the other night where who was it? Was it not Joel?
Joel Peralta.
Peralta, not Joel Pinheiro.
No,
not to be confused.
And not Johnny Peralta.
And not Johnny Peralta. It's as if Joel Pinheiro and Johnny Peralta had a baby.
A baby.
So he gets. So he's pitching for the Rays. He used to pitch with the Nationals. Pitch for the Nationals. He's a relief pitcher. And he comes out there to pitch, and Davey Johnson asks the umpire to examine his gloves. And lo and behold, there's pine tar on his gloves, which is illegal. So he gets thrown out of the game. That's in the rule book. No foreign substances on your glove. This sets off a back and forth between these two guys that is magnificent. It has Joe Maddon saying that Davey Johnson doing this, the manager of the Nationals, Davey Johnson doing this is Bush League. It's ridiculous. There are unwritten rules. Everybody knows it. He pitched for the Nats before, so Davey Johnson was somehow had like insider information, and guys should think twice about going to the Nationals and then playing somewhere else. And then Davey Johnson responds that, asked if he has plans to meet with Joe Maddon to talk it out. He said, "I don't really know him. He's kind of a wuss."
A weird wuss.
He seems like a weird wuss who's on Twitter a lot, and so I better not get involved with him because he's got all his followers on Twitter, and he should read the rule book. It's pretty simple. And Maddon shoots back, about the rule. I mean, this is fantastic.
Here, listen to Davey Johnson's quote. I looked him up on the internet and found he is a tweeter, so he can get to more people than me. But it was interesting reading. But you can tell him I have a doctorate of letters, too. Mine's from Loyola in humanities, and I'm proud of that.
I love it.
And they're just going back and forth.
They're just going back and forth. He's sort of a weird wuss. So, a couple things I want to look at here, Cal. First, I want to get your opinion about the actual act of Davey Johnson getting Peralta thrown out of the game. Knowing full well he has pine tar on his glove.
Right. Well, I think we need to back it up even further.
You want to go back to 2005?
No. We need to back up the fact that Peralta had pine tar on his glove. So the actual act in question is what started the ball rolling on this. So
yes.
I think we can all agree that what Peralta did was against the rules.
Is absolutely against the rules. Now,
right?
But Davey Johnson, acting on insider information, is that right? The only reason he knows that Peralta has the pine tar on his glove is because he pitched for the Nationals.
Well, is because somebody on the Nationals ratted him out.
Ratted him out. There's
and
a rat.
That's the missing piece of this that's fascinating. Who was it?
Right, like who on the Nats went to Davey Johnson and said, "Oh, by the way, if we're ever in a big spot, you can get him kicked out of the game because he uses pine tar on his glove."
And does this guy have an axe to grind with Peralta for some reason?
And supposedly it's not the first time that this sort of thing has happened either. Now I'm reading on ESPN. You go back to 2005, right? Joe Maddon is a bench coach for Mike Scioscia, okay? Mike Scioscia, manager of the Angels, gets I got to get it right. It had to be the White Sox because Ozzie Guillen called him gutless. Ozzie Guillen was still playing, right? So it had to be the White Sox. I don't know. I got to go back and read it. But Scioscia gets a pitcher thrown out of the game for the pine tar. There was a pitcher that – oh, no, no. Strike that. Sorry, I screwed it up. Brandon Donnelly is pitching for the Angels. And they get him thrown out for having pine tar on his glove. And Scioscia says that's an unwritten rule. It's accepted. Guys do this. It was you know, Bush League for them to call him out on that.
All right, so, and Madden is a coach on that
team. Madden's a coach on that team, and Peralta is in that bullpen.
In 2005?
Yes.
Wow.
He's a kid in the Angels bullpen.
Huh.
So three of the four players here two of the three players here are, you know, involved in this incident where Socha says basically the same thing that Joe Madden said. Now, Joe Madden's wacky. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But
he's a little weird.
He has a little bit of the we invented the game to him, or I invented the game, or I'm reinventing the game because I have to, because I have no payroll, and because we've had to make do with what we have, and crazy shifts, and, you know, that's it. He's got a little La Russa in him.
He's got a little I'm smarter than everyone type vibe, but he's not as, like, in your face about it as some others, but it's kind of underlying.
He also seems to be a very funny, you know, funny guy and sort of, you know, self-deprecating in certain ways and stuff. I've seen him interviewed. He's a good interview. He's done a magnificent job with that club. I mean, how could you say he hasn't? But this stuff going back and forth, he said the same thing as Mike Socha. Now, Cal, I know we're not in a locker room, but is that an unwritten rule? Are there some unwritten rules that guys should just accept, go on? Like pine tar above the label, you know what I mean? Like the old Brett, you know, the old George Brett thing with Billy Martin and stuff like that. Like, you could find 50 bats in a bat rack that had the same amount of pine tar on them as George Brett did.
Right.
It's just waiting for the most opportune time to call it out.
Yeah, well, I guess there's not a better time to call it out for Davey Johnson, since they're not going to be playing them again unless they're in the World Series,
right,
which is not out of the realm of possibility.
Not at all.
Teams. So if he's going to look for an opportune time, this is really the only time he has to do it. Is it a problem that he did it? I guess it does kind of violate an unwritten rule. But the bottom line is what Peralta was doing was against the rules. So Davey Johnson is well within his right to do exactly what he did. And you can't complain about it, because you can't use the unwritten rule as a defense as to not do it, like Joe Madden. Joe Madden was trying to deflect all responsibility off Peralta cheating.
Right.
And he was putting it all on Davey Johnson and saying, well, you know, you just don't do that. That was his defense. It's an unwritten rule. You don't do it. But the problem is, it was an actual rule that was being broken. None of them were taking accountability for that.
Right. I remember a show we did a long time ago. It might have even been summer of 2010, Cal, when we were first into the show. And we talked about A-Rod running across the mound. Remember that?
Yes.
Against, what's his name, the 646 there or whatever.
South Braden
with his area code and all that crap.
Right.
And somebody should really send out an APB for him, by the way. But you know, we went over this unwritten rules thing. But what A-Rod did is not an actual violation of the rules. Okay? He could run across the pitcher's mound and kick him, you know, if he wanted to.
That's right. And that's a good distinction, because putting pine tar in your glove is not an unwritten rule. That's a rule that's in black and white.
But is Madden arguing calling somebody out on it? Like Socha said in 2005, look, it's accepted. Guys do it. You know, if you're going to police all the guys, you know, the guy, and Madden said guys will police themselves. Right? You know, like it's even though it is against the rules, it's a violation of the rules. You know, Madden's argument is that it's accepted. It's an accepted violation of the rules. It's like pine tar being too high on a bat. Or it's like, you know, it's another good one, Cal, that I thought of? Where the guy stands in the on-deck circle. Okay? Or where a coach stands in the coaching box.
That's a good one.
Okay, the coach is supposed to stand inside the coaching box. By the letter of the law, he's supposed to stand inside the coaching box. I have seen many a third base coach or many a first base coach gain an advantage standing outside that box, whether it's tipping location, whether it's a signal to a runner on second base that there's a pickoff play on, whatever it is. Okay, are you going to call them on that?
That they don't typically call them on.
Right. Same thing with standing in the on-deck circle. I mean, by the letter of the law, the batter is supposed to stand in the on-deck circle or within a reasonable radius of the on-deck circle.
Right.
And you'll watch a game, a guy, you know, is standing basically like behind home plate. That's an unfair advantage. You're getting a different look at the pitcher you're not supposed to be getting.
But if someone wanted to call another guy out on it, they're well within their right to do it because it's a
they
rule.
They are, but is it cowardly? Is it what Madden said?
I don't know if it's... I feel like cowardly isn't the right word.
What was it? You're probably right. I'm going back, Callan.
Well, no, but that's what Madden called it.
Yes. No, Madden definitely did. I'm going back in my mental Rolodex, which is what I like to call my brain. And I'm thinking back to when you knew a guy was either putting Vaseline on a ball or scuffing a ball or something like that. Right? And there's a situation with the Mets, and I can't remember when it was. I want to say it was 88, and it was Jay Howell.
Yeah, he put pine tar on the ball in the playoffs.
In the playoffs.
And Davey Johnson called him out on it. Right, he was suspended for the rest of the playoffs.
Exactly. Now, that's a spot where you say, right, gamesmanship, right? It's the playoffs. I don't know why I just said playoffs like Jim Mora, but...
Because that's how you always have to say playoffs.
You're right. Playoffs?
Playoffs?
But he held on to that. They played the Dodgers 12 times that year.
Right.
He knew every game that Jay Howell appeared in that he had pine tar in his glove.
Can I tell you, though, there's the lesson that's learned here is because, you know, Davey Johnson did that in the playoffs, and he did it in this game against Tampa Bay the other day. The end result was the same. He lost both times. So karma came back and smacked him in the head.
Right, he lost the game both times, right.
He lost the playoff series.
He lost the playoff series, right. But did you see Peralta was suspended for 8 games?
He was suspended. And Davey Johnson even said he shouldn't be suspended. I'm not looking to get the guy suspended. He should be thrown out of the game, and that's it. I think a suspension would be too severe.
Yep.
We can agree on that.
Yeah. This is, I don't know him that well, but I thought he was a weird wuss anyway, Johnson said. I understand where he's coming from. His job as a manager to protect the players, but he doesn't know me from a hole in the hill. Which, by the way, is that a new one, Davey, that we're going with?
A hole in the hill.
A hole in the hill. He combined making a mountain out of a molehill and a hole in the wall, and he put it all into one cliche. But he doesn't know me from a hole. I'm going to start saying that. That's fantastic. What does that even mean? Or I him, for that matter, Johnson said. But I do know the rule book, and I do try to follow it. It's I'm sorry, it's a douchey. It's just so douchey.
Oh, it totally is.
Yeah, and then Madden comes back, dripping with sarcasm. Davey is right. I'm incapable of reading the rule book. And there's also reading between the lines in some situation that needs to be looked at, too. He's been around long enough. He knows. He knows better than that.
The best is that Madden got into it with Bobby Valentine a couple of weeks ago, too.
I know. He's just taken on everybody that invented baseball. I didn't know this about... There's another thing I want to talk about this, Cal, and then we'll move on. But I didn't know this about Davey Johnson. I'm only finding this out now. I mean, I read, you know, the Bad Guys 1 and stuff like that from his time with the Mets, and I knew he was a players manager, and I knew he was a guy who would go out and drink beers with the players and stuff like that and let them do their thing, and it's probably why Dwight Gooden and Daryl Strawberry developed coke problems.
He always looked the other way.
Yeah, always looked the other way. I didn't know he was this ornery cuss.
Who, Davey Johnson?
Yeah, and I've been hearing about this more and more as the Mets play the Nationals, and the Nationals are good. So Cohen, Gary Cohen, Darling, and Hernandez are talking more and more about how that arrogance of that 86 Mets team and that 88 Mets team was more from the players It was from Johnson. Like, Davey Johnson is that guy. And now the Natitude, which is a nice billboard they have behind home plate, for a team that has never won anything, ever. But that's okay. They're trying to establish a new culture there. I'm a Jet fan. I understand what it's like. But the whole Natitude thing, Cal, is Davey. Davey. That's why they're saying he's a perfect manager for Bryce Hall of Fame Harper and Stephen Hall of Fame Strasburg. You know, but I didn't know that. I didn't know he was this. He's a real SOB, that Johnson.
I that doesn't surprise me. But I guess the thing that we're learning is that he's underhanded. In other words, he's not outwardly an SOB. You know, he'll disarm you with that smile.
Smashing Pumpkin?
Yeah. but it appears that he's, you know, he's sneaky. And he'll pull the wow, I almost did the same thing.
He'll pull the rope out from under you?
The roll. I was going to say the roll.
He doesn't know me from a hill in the hole.
He'll pull the rug out from under you, or he'll pull the wool over your eyes.
He doesn't know me from a rope in the hill. He doesn't know me. This
guy, great.
This guy doesn't know me from a hole in the rope on the hill. He doesn't know me. He's making an ant out of a mole. Oh, sorry.
An ant out of a mountain.
He's making a mountain hill out of an ant hole. All right? Enough.
But the back and forth was pretty funny.
Oh, it was magnificent. Oh, I love it. Now, last thing on this unwritten rules thing, right? The last part of this that's fascinating for me is this, because I've, excuse me, because I've always wondered about this. Good radio, Steve. cough more. It's great. People love that.
Focus groups usually come back with that information. They want to hear more coughing and clearing of the throat.
So professional. I have yet to two and a half years, no cough button. I've always wondered this about clubhouses, though, Cal. When guys go from team to team with free agency and stuff, guys move around so frequently, especially pitchers. But to be honest with you, I've wondered it most with performance-enhancing drugs. But what is kept quiet and what isn't? Like, speaking of unwritten rules, like, this guy moves from here to here. Everybody knows he puts an excessive amount of pine tar in his glove. Do you not talk about it? Do you talk about it? If you're Joel Peralta, do you tell anybody you're doing that? You know, I've always wondered about that. It's a fascinating situation to me, in that in the game you might be or how about stealing signs even? You know what I mean? Like, the Phillies were accused of stealing signs. Does somebody go from the Phillies to another team and it cop to it? Or does that, you know, is that like muerta? Is that like, you know? What do you think? Do you think that stuff gets shared in the clubhouse?
There's so much movement that you'd have to think that some of it gets shared.
It's just unsaid, unwritten rule. Like, you don't. In Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah. See, like, the thing with Peralta, I keep coming back to the fact that it had to be like Peralta must have owed somebody money that he didn't pay up on, and the guy was like, that's. SOB, I got some goods on him. And then he told Davey Johnson, I don't know.
Right.
Right?
I really do wonder about that. As I said, I often wondered about it with PEDs. But I don't think those guys share any of that stuff. I really don't. I really think that's, you know, they learned from McGuire and Canseco, you know, sharing needles or whatever.
Well, if they do, it's,
yeah.
Really tight-lipped, like Clemens and Pettit.
Oh, please, don't get me started.
And that's, well, I'm just saying.
We're going to talk about the Subway Series, and guess who I get to see tomorrow night? Pitch.
Mm.
Oh, my God, he's in George Steinbrenner's box.
Does his white horse stay in the bullpen, or does it actually take him out to the mound?
On the road, you mean?
Yeah.
Because it takes him out to the mound at Yankee Stadium.
It does, right?
It may come from the Bronx. They may bring it down. It'll be come down the Triborough. He's gonna ride down the Triborough on the white horse. with an HGH needle in his pocket.
Oh, boy. Well, only if he's hurt, because he only used it to recover.
Here's, oh boy.
Let's not get, you know what?
I'm sorry, but can open worms everywhere.
Oh boy.
I hate to go Chandler on you here, but whoa, rich sister. That's actually a Joey line. Wow, boy, somebody knows Friends a little too well. All I was going to say about Andy Pettit is this. I have been accused of late of bashing Andy Pettit because I am a Yankee hater. And if he was a Met, I would have no problem with it. That is patently false. Does it help that he's a Yankee? Certainly not. I'll be honest. However, I do not accept Andy Pettit's apology, his reasoning, or basically anything he says as truth. And frankly, I think he's doing HGH right now.
Wow.
Because
All right.
He's 41. He had about 3 weeks of spring training after a year off. And he's throwing 92. Figure that. He just jumps up on the hill and starts putting up zeros. That must be some training regimen. Anyway, I will boo lustily tomorrow night. Lustily.
Did you think that Vinny Testaverde was taking some enhanced pharmaceuticals when he came back to the Jets?
Absolutely. God, I hope so. He's a football player.
That's all right.
Those guys should be allowed to take, absolutely. For what those guys have to put their bodies through, if they can take something that's going to lessen the pain and make them more durable and give them a better post-career because they are stronger, faster, and fitter, by all means. Now, I'm not advocating steroid use. I mean, I think Lyle Alzado might have a little something to say about that, but he's dead. You know, I'm not advocating the use of cycling for these guys. I'm just saying HGH for recovery purposes? Why not? For a football player, why not? These guys are putting themselves in 65 car accidents a day on any given Sunday. I think they should be looking into the pharmacological ways to help these guys recover and help their bodies. I really do in football. I really do. I think it's entirely different.
Interesting.
Too much? Too soon?
No. But you know,
I have a list of unwritten rules of society if you want to go to that.
Well, we'll get to that later. What, Cal?
No, I was going to say, let's talk about... Very outspoken about Andy Pettit.
Yes.
But the elephant on the hill here in this room with the moles and all the worms all over the place is Mike Piazza.
Yeah.
Now, where do you stand on that? Now he's never been proved that he used performance enhancing drugs. There have been a lot of rumors and speculation. How do you feel about all of that? As a Met.
Yeah, here's my thing with Piazza. If it came out that he used performance enhancing drugs, I would not be surprised. I would certainly be disappointed. But in my opinion, he didn't. Because he broke down the way he was supposed to break down. He was done catching by the time he was 33 years old. He was done. I mean, don't forget, Cal, he retired when he was 35. He didn't have 5-6 twilight years where he can suddenly hit 30 home runs. He broke down progressively as he was supposed to break down.
It's fair.
You know, so again, would I be surprised? No. Do I think he did? I don't. I genuinely don't. I don't think there was any substantial growth in his physical stature. I mean, you look at him as a rookie and you look at him as a 30-year-old guy, he's built pretty much the same. He's a little stronger, but that's about it. It's not like he went from Bonds to Bonds. You know? But again, I wouldn't surprise me. I told you. I mean, we've talked about this before, Cal. Who are the two players that would surprise you? There's only two left.
Chita Rivera,
exactly. Chita Rivera was clearly using performance-enhancing drugs. No one can dance like that.
I don't believe it. That would surprise me if it was her.
No, Chita Rivera, the only two guys that would really genuinely surprise you at this point. Literally, in all of baseball. To me.
Pretty much.
And Pedro. You know, I would put Pedro on that list.
Yeah, I wouldn't put him on the list. I know he didn't grow like the rest of them, but
he also broke down, though, Cal, as he was supposed to break down.
He did, but again, surprise me.
No. I would put him there. Now,
on the same level as Jeter and Rivera?
No.
And Pedro Martinez?
And definitely not on the same level as Chita Rivera or Carmen Miranda. Or any of the Latinos.
Or Charo.
Now, Charo, well, we know what was enhanced on Charo.
Hey, save it for 11 o'clock.
There it is.
Early.
I tune into the Love Boat tonight at 9 on the Love Boat. And then on Fantasy Island. You see, Tatu, she has come to Fantasy Island to let me put my hands on her huge on the Love Boat.
They've been showing Wrath of Khan a lot on HBO.
Montalban. That is...
Yanis Mas Macho.
Yanis Mas Macho. So tremendous.
The Botany Bay.
Lamas Montalban.
Yanis Mas Macho, Senor Lamas, or Montalban. That's Bill Murray at his finest, because he's a total game show host waiting for the answer.
Right.
So the question is, on this game show, is Giannis Mas Macho is the name of the game show, right?
Giannis Mas Macho.
And the concept is very simple. They just give you two guys, and you have to guess who is more macho. And it's Bill Murray as the host, and he's like, and it's time to play Giannis Mas Macho. Okay. You know, pregunta number one. Numero uno. ¿Quién es más macho? Fernando Lamas or Cato Montalban? And the contestants are like, the contestants are scratching their head.
Thinking about it.
Right. The music's playing in the background and he's got like the index cards, and as he's waiting he goes, ¿Quién es más macho? Señor Lamas or Montalban? Like, it's such a hard decision.
He's a professional, though. You can't allow the dead air, so he keeps talking.
Right, that's right. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Oh, man. So good. So good. And we all know the answer to that question. It's Ricardo Montalban, without a doubt.
Of course.
Incredible.
So, Peach, before we move into our next topic, give us a couple of unwritten rules. You got a list?
We got some unwritten rules. These are user submitted to the poll I put up, the unadvertised poll.
Nice. Where'd you put that up, on the U-Face?
I did it on the Reddit, you know, when I'm collecting illicit photos. I also put out some questions.
Okay, let's have it. After we do this, we're going to talk about the Subway Series. You are all witnesses to the rebirth, Subway Series Mach 2. And I'm completely comparing this to Spinal Tap, as in case you haven't picked up on that.
As much like most things.
Yes.
You compare to.
And then we're going to talk about RIP.
It's either Spinal Tap or Friends with you lately.
Yeah, I know. Boy. You know who's not Mas Macho? Sam Pete.
There he is.
San Pedro.
You can tell me whether or not you agree with any of these.
Okay, let's have it.
If you're on a hunting/camping/fishing trip, Under no circumstances do you show up with an unannounced friend.
That's elaborate, first of all. Who is this affecting?
Well, in other words, I guess if you're going to meet your buddies in the woods, you don't bring an extra right. person.
Who brought this guy?
Right. Hope you don't mind. I brought Sheldon from the office. Oh.
Oh,
best weekend ever.
There goes the camera.
Who brought the knock?
That is absolutely an unwritten rule that I would follow. I think you could take that a step further, and there are dozens of literally much less specific events than camping, where you don't bring the friend. Poker game with the boys.
Right. The bachelor party.
Bachelor party. A bachelor party you can get away with. Depends on.
I don't know. I've seen some. Oh please. Some loser side friends have been dragged into some bachelor parties that I've been at.
Absolutely, but depending on the size. If you're at like a 25-guy bachelor party, nobody's going to care.
And my cousin Tony from out of town.
And Tony winds up to be a douche.
That's right.
Listen,
he hits women, but he should be all right. Just don't let him drink too much. Oh, great. This is going to be awesome.
If you bring in a guy to a ball game, make sure that the guy at least knows the sport that you're bringing him to.
Oh, well, huge unwritten rule.
Wow. Is that against me? I just felt like the room got cold.
No.
Jeez. If you're going to do a sports show, get a guy on the show who knows anything about sports.
However, your producer doesn't necessarily need to know anything about sports. Unwritten rule.
There's also the urinal rule, which we've already discussed.
Yes.
Take the one furthest away.
Unwritten rule, absolutely.
Okay. If you sleep in somebody else's bed, make sure you make the bed.
Absolutely.
Right when you get up.
Totally.
Never touch another man's fries. Never touch another man's drums. What do you think of those two?
I have broken both those rules.
Does that
fall
under the same category as like A and B?
Right. I've broken both those rules at the same time.
You A and B'd it.
I sat down at a guy's drum set and ate fries.
Oh.
His fries. Brian Stevens. Poor guy.
Terrible.
I drank all his Diet Coke, too. That's way too inside. Sorry.
Always face the door in an elevator?
Yes. That's a classic unwritten rule. I wonder what that's from, though. I feel like that's superstition.
Well, why would you face any other way in an elevator?
I don't know. Why would you have your back to the door? Anybody else getting in that elevator might think something suspect is going on. If you have your back to the door and you're in the corner.
Well, you know,
another SNL skit.
They did that with Schwimmer, a Friends guy, right? They kept effing with Schwimmer in the elevator.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't come up with it quicker. My bad.
Never return your friend's truck or car with an empty tank of gas.
Yep. Can you get away with that with a family member?
Well, it's exclusively done to me.
I'm not.
He's making all of these very personal.
I got a lot of things I got to get off my chest.
Wait, this wasn't really a poll, was it, PJ?
No, this is just the list I wrote out.
PJ's big list of grievances. Why does he have a scroll? Who are you, Santa Claus?
Later on, the feats of strength.
Go ahead, what else you got? I'm enjoying these.
Hold on, I lost the if I invite you over for dinner, don't touch my grill.
Wow, that's again a very personal one. Is there a danger of that? I mean, does that happen when guys' friends come over
and then one guy decides that he's going to commandeer the grill? Sure, that happens.
I've seen that. Yep.
Wow.
Very annoying.
What the hell?
Some set of balls on that guy.
What are you doing?
What's going
this
on,
guy,
bro?
I got this.
Some set of bells on that guy. I don't know about that. That's a definite unwritten. Yeah, I got that one. What else you got? There's got to be a dating. There's got to be a dating one in here, right? Or is that guy code? Are we going from unwritten rules into guy code?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay. You got to let me know if we make that leap.
You must maintain at least 5 seconds of eye contact with a woman before you can
look at other
parts. Dee-dee-dee.
Right. That's fair.
Let's see.
That's the Emily Post unwritten rule.
One, two.
Here's a fun one. Jazz musicians and or fat chicks with Camaros always have the best weed. I think I got to end it there. Don't bring a camera to a bachelor party.
Oh, great one. That's a great place to end. That is the ultimate unwritten rule.
God, can you imagine if one was at mine? Holy.
I don't know. I wasn't invited to yours.
Doesn't matter. You heard.
Yeah, I know. Moving on.
To quote you, well, we weren't friends then.
Right. Let's put a little salt on the wound. All right.
That's
moving
fine.
On.
Wow. This is getting uncomfortable.
I never liked you. I never accepted you. I'm not
now
proud of you.
Now you're my father. Great.
Still waiting for you to be a man.
My father is not Robert Loggia. We're not doing that again. We're not doing it again. All right, you let's talk about the Subway series, Cal.
Okay.
PJ has a Is that a Subway?
The Subway. I brought a microphone to the Subway.
Wow.
If I leave that on for the whole thing, can you guys just talk over that? I got 25 minutes of it.
1940 radio hour. 1940 radio hour. Back again.
Steve, your face was priceless when you realized what it was.
The shadow knows.
Next thing they know, they were on the elevated train. Bing, bong. Come back here, he shouted.
Worst radio show ever.
Oh, boy. That show was quickly canceled. Quickly. Brought to you by Lifebuoy Soap. Quickly canceled. They had one sound effect. It was the Subway. That was it. They had to run it for the whole 15 minutes of the show. What do you mean we have to write everything as if it's in the Subway? What are you talking about? We only have one sound effect. Subway Stories, presented by Ovaltine. Is this your train, ma'am? Is this the local?
You're killing me.
All right, Subway Series, Mets, Yankees, part two. The Mets have had the strangest four series here, Cal, ever. This is bizarre. They've either swept or been swept their last 12 games. There's a lot of emotional up and down here.
I know.
I can't. I don't know what to make of it. But
no, season's over. Oh, they're back in it. Season's over. Oh, they're resilient.
That's exactly what it is. Season's over. They're awesome. Season's over. They're fantastic. They come into the Subway Series again, 500. Having just swept the Baltimore Orioles, fantastic pitching performances by Dickie. Ridiculous. Johan Santana and Dylan G pitched a really good game yesterday, Cal. The Yankees had won 10 in a row before losing these last two straight to the Braves, so they are still en fuego. And of course, they swept the crap out of the Mets, in that three-game series. It was a very demoralizing three-game series. A walk-off win with Russell Martin. Does this go up to Utica? Say, pal, can you spare a nickel for the Tribune? Does anybody know if this line ends in Rockaway? I'm going to go to the beach and walk into the ocean.
As demoralizing as it was, though, the last series.
Yes.
It was a lot closer than the results bared out.
Well, other than Friday night.
But the Mets could have won two of those games. So, you get swept in that series, and it's awful and demoralizing, but you still have the knowledge that you could have won two of those games. So
yes.
I don't think they head into this weekend intimidated by the Yankees.
No, I don't think so at all, and I also think that they're excited to get the Yankees in their ballpark and get it out of Yankee Stadium, because let's face it, a couple of the home runs that were hit during that series wouldn't have been out of Roberto Clemente up in the Bronx, let alone Citi Field. I looking at this series, Cal, we did the whole tail of the tape for the last one, and I jokingly said Yankee sweep.
Yeah.
And they did, so let's not do this. But I will say this. The pitching matchups are very intriguing to me. Nice versus Pettit again.
Mm-hmm.
Part deux. Tomorrow night, I will be there. Now, this is my first Met Yankee game in probably 5 years. Probably 5 years or 4 years. I want to say my last Met Yankee game was at Shea. That's got to be 08, right?
At least, yeah. No sooner than 08.
I stopped going to Met Yankee games because it was just too much. Now, I was at the Clemens Piazza game. Not the beaning. I was at the Grand Slam.
You,
in Yankee Stadium.
Your recollection of your last game, last Subway Series game, is incorrect.
Okay.
We.
Oh dear. Did we?
Along with your lovely wife, who was not your wife at the time, but pre-marriage, attended the AJ Burnett game at Citi Field.
You are correct. In 09.
In 09.
That's right.
So that's and that's my last Subway Series game too.
As we prayed that he wouldn't no hit the Mets that day.
Right, because he took one into the fifth or the sixth inning.
Fifth or the sixth, yes.
Right. And they were launching balls all over this cavernous park.
That's right. They were making it play like Williamsport.
Right.
Yeah. It's great.
That was the last one.
I was at the Matsui two home run game against the Yankees.
I'm sorry, you said that you were at the Clemens Piazza game?
The Grand Slam game, not the beaning game.
Okay.
At Yankee Stadium, last row of the stadium.
I think I was there too with, were you there with our buddy Nello?
No.
Then I was.
Yes, I was there with other people. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
So, I've been to my fair share. I would say I've probably been to five, six maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I
was at the first one at Yankee Stadium, the Malicki game.
No.
Yeah.
How is that possible? We've never talked about that.
We probably have.
On these airwaves, we have not.
Not on these airwaves, no. I was at the very first Subway Series game in 1997.
You do realize that all our conversations before we started doing this radio show don't really count.
No, none of them were recorded.
Right, that's correct. So even though we've known each other since we're both 8 years old.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't count.
We have a lot of catching up to do.
That entire sticker book conversation from 87?
That'll be on an episode sometime in August.
Stay tuned. Look for that on the box set.
That's on the director's cut, I think.
That's right. I can't believe I got another gold Bill Buckner. It's ridiculous. Do you remember the gold cards, Cal?
I think Buckner was silver, though.
Buckner might have been silver. The Mets always had the worst gold and silver players, too.
Right.
For, like, the early 80s ones, because they were terrible.
It was like Mazzilli.
Mazzilli or Hubie Brooks.
Hubie Brooks and Neil Allen, I think, might have been a gold.
Mookie was, for sure.
Yeah.
Mookie Wilson was definitely a gold.
Youngblood.
Oh, man. Played both ends of a doubleheader for two different teams.
Sure did. Got a hit in both games.
1982. Yep. number 18 in your programs, by the
way.
For
both teams, too. He kept the same number with Montreal.
Got 18. Nice. Yeah. I like Joel Youngblood. He was handsome.
Hard to not like him.
Did you know that Mike Jorgensen was a local guy?
Mike Jorgensen, local meaning from the tri-state area?
I think he went to St. John's.
That's not true.
I think he's from Brooklyn.
Maybe from Brooklyn. I didn't know that.
Am I thinking of Mike Jorgensen? Yeah, because...
I think he cuts your lawn.
No, he went on to have a pretty long coaching career, Mike Jorgensen, didn't he? For years he was a coach.
I think he coached the Cardinals.
Yeah. Anyway, boy, we're really talking about the Subway Series.
Slick Fielding, first baseman.
Yes, number 22.
Mike Jorgensen.
Correct?
He was number 22.
Ooh. So Cal,
let's get back to...
PJ found Jazz Odyssey from Spinal Tap.
Nice.
This is it. This is one portion of it. So it's appropriate to play this underneath whatever we're talking about right now. Because it's not the Subway Series. We're talking about our Mike Jorgensen baseball sticker book cards. This is by Derek Smoles. He wrote this. Cal, PJ, and I were talking before the show about how great it is, how quickly they throw Derek Smoles under the bus for writing this. Michael McKeon's line as they're playing this. Mr. Derek Smoles on base, he wrote this. And it's like this great, like, we had nothing to do with this. I just want to make it clear. Tap.
That's great.
This is so bad, Peach. Are you listening to this? This is so awful. I don't think it's wise to perform a free-form jazz exploration in front of a festival crowd. It's like 12 people there. Puppet show ends, Final Tap. If I told them once, I told them 1,000 times. So, back to the Subway Series.
All right, so you'll be there.
I will be there tomorrow night with Big Paulie.
Okay.
And we're very excited. Going to go do the batting practice thing, Cal.
Nice.
The gates open up 2.5 hours early for this particular game. Usually it's 1.5 hours. But they open the gates 2.5 hours early. You can go in, see the BP, the whole thing. I'm excited. I am very excited for this game. And I'm excited for this series. The series does have some juice. CeCe and Dickie on Sunday night, Cal?
That you can't get a if you needed to have a matchup between the best pitchers on both teams, you couldn't come up with a better one right now.
Yeah. Now that's a perfect segue into what I want to talk about with R.A. Dickey and what I wanted to bring up with you. I caught this the other night on. So we'll see what happens with the Subway Series. Both teams come in really good shape. The Mets, again, with this weird win three, lose three, win three, lose three.
What do you make of it? Are they inconsistent or are they resilient? What is it?
Both. Four. I think it's a combination of having good starting pitching and a bad bullpen and having relying extraordinarily heavily on clutch hitting. And there's just games where two out, you know, clutch hitting is not there. They don't have a bopper lineup. Right, so they
no.
Right, but they do lead the they lead all of Major League Baseball in two out runs scored, and they've scored an inordinate amount of two out runs, a ton of two out runs. But if those hits aren't there over a 3-day span, they're going to lose.
Yeah,
but their starting pitching is good enough that they're not going to lose five in a row.
Well, and you've been saying that for a long time this season. They've got Dickey and Santana, and that will stop any losing streak and prevent you from really going on an extended slide. And I give you all the credit in the world because you picked up on this theme early in the season before most kind of realized what was going on here with Dickie.
Yeah, I mean, I got lucky too in the fact that nobody we both expected the Mets to be competitive. We really did. We
right.
said it in March. We had Ted Berg on the Patrick Flood on the show back in February. Ted Berg on the show from SNY, the guys from SNY.TV and Mostly Mets podcast. And Cal, we told them, I said, if they stay healthy, why can't they be competitive? Why can't they be this year's Diamondbacks? Because they would have really good starting pitching. Nobody could have expected what Ari Dickey is doing. I mean, what Ari Dickey is doing is historic.
Nobody except Omar Minaya, who clearly saw this coming when he signed him a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Other than that, nobody.
Right, when he signed him for filler. Triple
right,
A fodder.
To fill out the Triple A rotation.
That's right. That's right.
But he knew.
Oh, he knew. He saw something.
He knew that one day, R.A. Dickey would have a stretch of games that rivaled Sandy Koufax.
That's right. Walter Johnson.
Walter Johnson. He would
right.
do something that no pitcher had done in the National League in over 65 years.
It's 1944. He knew.
And everybody,
he had a lot of competition for him, Cal.
Right.
You know, R.A. Dickey was going to go to Korea to pitch for $300,000 or the Mets. Like, that's how thin Omar Minaya left the minor league system for the Mets, that he had to sign R.A. Dickey to fill out a roster spot. And P.S., it was ridiculed up and down. It was a punchline. That's how bad things were.
Right.
That Omar Minaya had to sign R.A. Dickey to a minor league deal because they didn't have people to pitch at AAA Buffalo. But anyway.
Sorry, we digressed a little bit.
What I was going to say was, I don't know if it's – what do you think? Do you think it's inconsistency or do you think they are resilient? I think it's both.
I think that this team has very good starting pitching and – that's the starting pitching is what will keep them in the conversation for the majority of the year.
Okay.
I think the bullpen is what's going to prevent them. The bullpen as it currently stands
right now.
Unless it's altered, I think this bullpen will prevent them from really making a serious run late into the summer. But the overall picture and the one thing where the inconsistency plays in is it's a young team. It's a group of guys that are learning to play at this level all at the same time, and we're finding out about them right now. So sometimes they come up big with two outs. I think that there's a little bit of they got a little bit of the clutch gene in some of these guys. I think
right.
Kirk Nieuwenhuis has it.
Right.
I think Josh Tolley has it.
Yeah, those younger guys are not intimidated by that two out spot, and Terry Collins has drilled it into these guys that they have to take advantage of every opportunity with guys in scoring position, because they're not going to hit a lot of 3-run home runs,
right.
and they're not going to have a lot of 6-run innings.
Right.
So with two outs and a guy on second, you have got to have a great at bat and pick that guy up.
That's right. But they're not going to do that all the time.
But again, exactly. That's what
because
you're susceptible.
Right. But because they're a young team and they're learning to play. They're not. You can't definitively say what these guys are. If you go around the diamond, six out of the nine guys that are playing on any given night, you can't definitively say what is that guy. You know.
Yeah.
There's only a handful, and that's what makes. It's what makes them so interesting. It's what makes them so frustrating, because they're going to have these slides. But I think the one trait that they all seem to be exhibiting is that they are resilient, and they don't let the losses get them down.
Right. No, I agree. It's a together clubhouse. That's for sure.
It's a together clubhouse. I think they've got the right manager
yep.
to lead this group. He might not be the right guy ultimately when these guys – eventually develop, but for right now, he's absolutely the right guy.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm starting to think he might be the right guy overall, Cal.
He might be, and I like him a lot. I don't know for sure that that's the case, but what we do know is that right now, in this moment with this group, he is the absolute right guy.
Yes.
and it's working. It's working well.
I have a Yankee question, and then one more thing on the Mets, and then I really want to ask you about this R.A. Dickey thing. Because
okay.
I saw something on the MLB Network the other night that really pissed me off.
Uh-oh.
Involving Outlider and Mitch Williams, of all people. Mitch Williams. Seriously? Seriously. But anyway. On the Yankees now, 10-game winning streak, they have absolutely shut everybody up. I mean, without a doubt, they started hitting in the clutch. They're getting fantastic starting pitching. I mean, unbelievable starting pitching. And we said that's the key to that team, right? We said if they were going to falter and have like an 85-win season, it's because the rotation has fallen apart. Well, Ivan Nova continues to be great. Andy Pettit has been a revelation coming back and really solidifying the number two spot in that rotation. Nova then moves to three. Andy Pettit coming back and being viable, Cal, frankly, has made all the difference.
Yeah,
because it means that Nova can be a three. It means Kuroda and Nova can be that 3-4 combo. The pressure's not on Kuroda to be the number two. And CeCe can be the one guy, and he's got somebody to back him up. Again, you're not going to have long losing streaks. You wind up with Kuroda pitching against other teams' number fours. That's where he's much better suited. Hughes gets to pitch against other teams' number fives. And even though he got knocked around the park the other day, he's been very good the last month since he's, you know, pitching for his job. Obviously, pitching's been the key there. But does this Yankee team run away and hide, Bri? Or I still feel like there are enough flaws, or there are several flaws with this team that I don't think they can go ahead and run away and hide.
I think they're flawed, but I think they are. Right now, they're in a great spot. They're getting consistent starting pitching, which is the one area we didn't know if they were going to get. Their bullpen is getting healthy now. Robertson went down. Rivera went down first. Then Robertson went down. Robertson's back. Soriano seems to be thriving in that closer spot.
He has. Yep.
You know, that's been a huge boon for them.
Yep.
And they're hitting.
Teixeira's picked it up, right. I mean,
Teixeira's starting to hit. Cano has gotten hot. I mean,
right.
They're hitting. A-Rod is starting to hit. They're all hitting. I don't know if they're going to run away and hide because I think I got to tell you, Baltimore didn't impress me in this three-game series.
No,
but they
not
but
at
they
all.
Ran but they ran into hot pitching, so I give them a pass. But in Tampa Bay didn't impress me either. But those two teams are going to be there, I think, for the majority of the season, which is going to prevent the Yankees from running away and hiding. I think in the end, the Yankees are going to be there, and they're going to be, you know, it's either going to be the Yankees or the Rangers that finish with the best record in the American League.
Yeah, that's probably right.
You know, but
Cal, the Orioles don't have enough pitching to hang around, Cal. They don't.
Yeah, probably not.
I mean, if they have to go up against that Yankee lineup another 12 times with that starting pitching, there's no chance. I mean, they lose 10 of those games. Because, I mean, look what the Mets lineup did to them. You know? I mean, they just don't have enough starting pitching. They just don't.
But Tampa does.
Oh, Tampa absolutely does. I think what the Mets did was an aberration. You know,
yeah,
they just happen
to catch those guys on bad nights.
As Josh Lewin, the Mets radio voice, put it, they whipped up a number six on them. It was great. He repped Blazing Saddles. It was fantastic. They came into town, a whoompin' and a whompin'. All right, and then last thing on the Subway Series, and then I want to ask you about the Sorry Dickey thing. Do the Mets get 2 out of 3 here, and if so, why? Wow, Cal on the spot. Dun-dun-dun. Squeeb, squeeb, squeeb.
All they need to do...
Play the Subway again. Play the Subway again. Hey, buddy, can you spare a dime for a GI down on his luck? Worst radio show ever. Now time for more Subway Story with Clive Wilkins. I read today, Cal, before I let you answer that, give you more time to think. PJ, I like this too.
Thanks.
There was a great post on Amazing Avenue, and I had actually known this, but it was nice to be refreshed of this. Jack Kerouac was a huge sports fan. Obviously, he played football and stuff, and was an all or could have been an All-American and stuff like that in football. And he invented a fantasy baseball league when he was a kid, like in the 30s. The 20s and 30s that he carried on into like 1958. And it was all, they have all his, he wrote up like, he made up entire fake teams. He wrote up like a newsletter. And he invented almost like a version of Strat-O-Matic.
Wow.
He had these cards and he would play games with these guys that he, these teams that he made up, like the New York Chevys. Like one year he had all cars in the league. I mean, check it out on AmazingAvenue.com. I think it's AmazingAvenue.com, right?
Without the G.
Without the G, right. AmazingAvenue.com. Great write-up about Jack Kerouac's fantasy baseball league. And some of the names are stupendous. Stupendous. They're just these great, you know, like Chase Romero. They're just great names. And the name of his, he wrote like a would be like a newspaper almost for this league that had like updates on players and stuff like that. And it was called the Daily Ball. I love, that's my fantasy team this coming next year, without a doubt.
The Daily Ball.
The Daily Ball.
I like that. That's inventive.
Yeah. Notes. It's, but you know, who would have thought, you know, the leading author of the Beat Generation.
Right.
Would be this, you know, you want another piece of trivia about Jack Kerouac, Cal? In his last years, he lived about six blocks from where you live right now.
Where?
In East Northport.
Get out of here.
Yep, he lived off Greg, not on Greg, but right around Greg Lynn.
That's very interesting. I
yep.
did not know that.
Yep. His mother had a house there, and I think that's where he lived when he passed away. Very young when he died.
Right.
But yeah, he lived in East Northport on Long Island.
That's
like about 5 minutes from where you live right now.
That's literally like across the street.
Exactly. I know.
Jack Kerouac.
Yep. Jack Kerouac.
Wow.
So PJ, as PJ well knows, my favorite author was also had invented the first fantasy baseball league.
Huh.
So back to my question, cue the Subway soundtrack. Tell me, Cal, who do you like in the big series? Do the Mets take 2 out of 3? And if so, why?
I think they can.
Okay.
I don't think they will.
Okay.
I think they're going to win one.
So they will not get swept.
I do not see them getting swept. I certainly don't see them sweeping the Yankees to even the score.
You don't like the Chris Young Ivan Nova matchup for tomorrow?
I don't care much for that matchup, no.
That's fair.
I don't. I also think that the Dickey might be a little due.
See.
I think he might be due. That's why now he might not be, and it just wouldn't surprise me if they knocked him around a little bit.
Don't you love how Mike Frances is building this up, by the way?
Right, that it's the biggest game.
Right, and who doesn't want to see Dickey against the Yankees and,
right,
you know, building it all up so that if the Yankees knock him around, he'll really have a party with it.
Well, you know, you puff out your chest. You walk around, you puff out your chest.
If the Yankees do beat. Ooh, I like this. What is this? Is that still Jazz Odyssey? God, it's awful. Derek Smoles, you wrote this. But he's building it up, so, for the fall.
Of course he is, because that's what he does. And, I mean, if he has said it how many times this week, R.A. Dickey is the best pitcher in baseball right now. So that if the Yankees get to R.A. Dickey, then you know, the vaunted Yankee lineup has beaten the best pitcher in baseball.
Which brings me to what I want to ask you next. Really well done, by the way. That's called a blind segue in the Pistons.
It would have been better done if you didn't point it out.
That's probably a good point. Right.
I think you telegraphed it a little
Right. And also, I made up the blind segue thing.
No, that's a real thing.
Is it?
No.
Nobody says that. He doesn't know me from a hole in the hill, Cal. I still can't. I want to hear what other cliches, like really easy cliches, Davy Johnson is screwing up. Like what else could be in there? There's got to be other really easy ones that he's messing up.
Like a bird in the basket, is there a two in the hand?
Oh, please. Forget about that. That's well beyond it. A stone's throw away from the bird in a handbasket. And it's gone to hell as well. Hell in a hand truck.
The hell in a handbasket.
That is the greatest single sports team, made-up sports team name in the history of... Oh, boy.
Mitch Williams and Al Leiter.
Yes. So the other night I'm watching MLB Network after Dickey twirls his second consecutive one-hit effort, not been done in the National League since 1944, done in the American League in 1988 by Dave Steeb. He has struck out in those two games. He has given up two hits in 18 innings, struck out 25, and walked two. He is currently 11-1 with a 2 ERA, 103 strikeouts in 99 innings. I think he only has, 47 walks?
It's not even.
But he only has 7 walks in his last 7 starts.
Right, in his last 6 starts, his ERA is 0.18.
Right, he's given up one earned run in that time.
No. Oh, 1 earned run in 6 starts, right.
Right, 1 earned run and 1 unearned run.
Which cost him the streak.
Which cost him the scoreless streak. He's been, it's beyond dominant. Again, I feel like I have to go back to Dwight Gooden in 85, to Pedro, but I didn't get to watch that every day with the Red Sox in, what was that, 99,
yeah.
You know, we didn't get to see Seaver, you know, at the height of his powers. So really all we have to compare this to is Doc in 85, as Met fans. You know, getting to see it every day. He is clearly the best pitcher in baseball right now. Clearly. By any measurable, he is the best pitcher in baseball right now. You can go through every he leads the league in strikeouts. He leads the league in ERA. He leads the league in wins. He's second in the league in whip. He's the best pitcher in baseball right now. But not if you ask Al Leiter. And not if you ask Mitch Williams. They'll just tell you he's pitching very well. But he can't be the best pitcher because he throws a knuckleball. That's their reasoning. Can't be the best pitcher in baseball. He's a knuckleballer. Cal, this parlays into our having to listen to callers call up WFAN and say that he's scuffing the ball. He must be cheating. You had one genius who said they should outlaw the knuckleball because it's not fair. It's not fair. It's baseball. It's not fair. Okay, you know what? They should also outlaw guys who can throw 95 miles an hour. That's not fair. How come they could throw so hard? It's not fair. They should outlaw the fastball. It's not fair. Certain guys can throw it faster than other ones can. Not fair. All right. The idea that this is somehow, that because he throws a knuckleball, primarily, okay, that he's not any less of a pitcher than Steven Strasburg or Justin Verlander or whoever is ridiculous. In fact, one could argue what he's doing, throwing a knuckleball and not walking anybody, is unheard of. He has 7 walks over those 7 games. Charlie Huff used to walk 7 guys in a game. 7 guys in a game. So I was livid, Brian. Livid. This notion that somehow he's less of a pitcher because he doesn't throw 95 miles an hour and because he's getting guys out with a knuckleball is stupid. Sorry. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's stupid only in the fact that he has reinvented a pitch. He has completely taken a pitch and revolutionized it. He's doing something that no man has. He's throwing a pitch like nobody else has thrown a pitch before in the history of this game.
Correct.
So if they want to use the argument that he it's not, you know, you can't call him the best pitcher in baseball because he's a knuckleballer. He's a knuckleballer by name. But what he's throwing is not like any knuckleball that's ever been thrown before in baseball.
And not only that, who cares? He's getting people out at a ridiculous rate. And you're right. He absolutely is reinventing a pitch. Absolutely.
That's not hyperbole either.
No,
he literally is throwing the knuckleball completely different.
Absolutely. Patrick Flood, our buddy over at patrickfloodblog.com, wrote about 8,000 words on R.A. Dickey the other day, and it's a great read. If you have 30 minutes or so that you're going to be on the can, something, check out patrickfloodblog.com. He wrote everything you want to know about R.A. Dickey as far as the knuckleball and what he's doing and blah, blah, blah. You're right. He is doing something completely inventive, but this to me is more about a guy like Al Leiter, a retired pitcher, or Mitch Williams, who threw 99 and had no friggin' idea where it was going. And by the way, Joe Carter's ball hasn't landed yet, Mitch. Okay, good job. Way to close that one out. Way to be the only guy who ever gave up a World Series-ending home run. Congratulations. Oh, wait, that's not true. Mazurowski hit a series-ending home run, didn't he?
He did.
Then what is Joe
Carter's? But it was Game 7.
Joe Carter's is Game 7?
Joe Carter's was Game 6.
6. Why is Joe Carter's distinctive, then? It's distinctive for a reason, other than it ended the series.
I think because it was Game 6, because I think
Mazurowski's was Game 7.
It was Game 7, and the series was going to end one way or the other.
Right. I think the other thing wasn't Joe Carter's, weren't they down a run? Whereas Mazurowski's, the game was tied.
Well, Mitch Williams is the only one to do it in another country. You want to find something.
In any case, how did that 99 mile an hour fastball look going out?
You bring up a very good point. It kind of reeks of jealousy.
And they said he shouldn't start the All-Star game, Cal. Oh, I don't think that's Al Leiter, I don't think that's a no-brainer. I mean, he's pitching very well. He's not the best pitcher in baseball.
Well,
who is?
You can make an argument for a number of other pitchers. You can. It's not a no-brainer that R.A. Dickey is the best pitcher in baseball right now. It's not. I'm sorry.
The guy just threw back-to-back complete game one-hitters.
Yeah, he did, and he is in the conversation, and you wouldn't be
better than that.
Matt Cain is pitching better than that. Is not pitching better than that, but Matt Cain is pitching at the top of his game. Steven Strasburg, Gio Gonzalez, they're all pitching at the top of their game. And you're not wrong if you want to say that Dickey is the best pitcher in baseball right now. You're not wrong, but it's not a slam dunk. There are a lot of other pitchers that are pitching well.
If Steven Strasburg had done what R.A. Dickey has done over his last 7 games, The fetting wouldn't stop.
Yeah, it's true.
It's because R.A. Dickey is a journeyman pitcher who throws a knuckleball. And Al, I need 117 pitches to get through four innings. Leiter doesn't consider that to be a pitcher. He's a gimmick. Yeah, well, guess what? That gimmick is doing something you've never done.
I don't think it's a gimmick.
I don't think it's a gimmick either. I'm saying, Cal, that's how he's viewed.
Right. As a matter of fact, by the definition of the word pitching, that's exactly what he's doing right now.
Yeah. It doesn't take much to be able to throw a 97-mile-an-hour fastball by somebody. Ask Bobby Parnell.
Right. And we, you know, I was having this conversation with my father the other night. You take a guy like Steven Strasburg, who's 22 years old and can throw 100 miles an hour. You got to give a lot of the credit to the catcher in his scenario, because the catcher is the one that's directing Steven Strasburg on where to throw the ball and how to pitch and what kind of pitch to throw. R.A. Dickey is just – he's got two pitches. He's throwing a knuckleball or he's throwing a fastball. And he's the one that's throwing it, and Josh Tolley or Nickias, the catcher, is you don't put up a target. You're a catcher, you know. If you're catching a knuckleball, you're not putting up a target for the ball to hit you. You've got to follow the ball. So, in a sense, they're following Dickey's lead. Dickey is the one dictating the game. In a Strasburg case, the catcher is the one dictating the game. So what Dickey's doing makes it even more of a pitching performance and not a gimmick.
And he, and absolutely true. Great point, Brian. And as you alluded to before, he's doing something with a pitch that no one's ever done. I mean, I caught his interview on – because, you know, the story is magnificent with the book and the trials and tribulations that the guy's gone through. I mean, he's a complete Hollywood story waiting to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I caught him on Fresh Air on NPR, and he was, you know, he was there on there to talk about the book or whatever. But because it was sort of a different, you know, that's a little different than being on ESPN. And R.A. Dickey is a pretty erudite, you know, sort of intellectual guy.
But you know what, Steve? It's different, but he's not different.
No, absolutely not. But he talked a little bit more about the science of the knuckleball because the audience are not sports fans.
Okay.
So he was a little more in tune to the fact that the listeners might not have an idea of what the heck a knuckleball is. And so he talked about the science of throwing it and what he's trying to do with the air resistance and the spin and what and where he's aiming it. And he's gotten it to where he throws it a little bit harder and blah, blah, blah. And it's a science. And all these guys are in a fraternity, and they, you know, he feels like he's the standard bearer for this fraternity of knuckleballers and stuff. I got so upset. I mean, it's just so ridiculous to say that this guy's not going to start the National League All-Star game because he's a knuckleball pitcher. He leads in every statistical category in baseball. Sorry, he's tied for most strikeouts in the major leagues with Justin Verlander. I mean, come on. Come on. But you're going to go start Strasburg because he throws 98 miles an hour? Well, good. Knock yourself out. Hope nothing bad happens to his arm in the All-Star game. I mean, just it's just a joke, you know? And half of me hopes they make – well, all of me hopes they make the playoffs. But a part of me hopes he can continue to – you know, look, he's not going to pitch to a 2 ERA or a 0.15 ERA the rest of the season. You know, that's the thing about the knuckleball. We saw in that game in Atlanta, there are days where it's not going to work.
And weather conditions where
it doesn't work. But if that team gets in the playoffs, Brian, and he's, you know, consistently throwing as well as he has, and this is not out of nowhere. The guy had a decent year last year. He pitched in tough luck. And he was very good the year before that. I mean, I think he's been building to this.
He has.
What a weapon that would be in the postseason, huh? Run him out there three times in a five-game set. Not to mention he screws up the rest of the series.
That's the big thing.
You know, you have to face him in the first game of the series, and you have to make all these adjustments to try to hit the knuckleballer, and then you have Bobby Parnell come in the eighth throwing 98 miles an hour, you know, and then the next day you see Johan Santana, who's got the great changeup. Your hitters are all screwed up. I just – I – That really pissed me off. Really a lot.
Well, you know, whenever someone's successful, there's always a faction that looks to discredit them. No matter who you're talking about. You talk about R.A. Dickey. You talk about LeBron James. Whoever you want to talk about. There's always, I believe what they call them are haters.
Haters, that's right.
Haters.
You see how we did that? PJ, you see how we did that? I mean, that's nice. Yes, it's time for the Radio Unload Fun Load. Brought to you by Subway Story. Tonight at 6:45. On 1390 on your radio dial, Subway Story. I heard we're going to drop the big one. DiMaggio playing tomorrow?
Hey, conductor, what's the quickest way to the ballpark?
Dushine! Dushine!
Nickel, shoe shine. Get your paper here. What's going on? Oh, boy.
Smile in the mouth, coach. Get your smile in the mouth,
coach. That dame's a swell looker. Maybe I should follow her. She's the moon and the stars. Me and my friend Homer Bailey here are just going to jump on the A-line, go uptown, and shoot the moon. What kind of gin joint is this? Of course I'm...
All right, boys, off the corner.
Wait. Somebody's got to be the Irish cop. You'd be hanging high to Heyman in the morning.
Move it along.
Move it along, boys. Nothing to see here on the platform. Okay, time for the fun load. Enough Subway stories for one night.
Who knew we could have so much fun with this stupid, stupid sound effect?
Say, do you know if the IRT goes to the Copa? I'm going to meet the boys at Two Chores. Tonight in the fun load, we're going to discuss underdogs, Cal. You love this topic. I love this topic.
There's
this is a beaut.
No need to fear. Underdog is here.
Wow.
We're getting silly with it today. I'm sorry.
Somebody is producing the crap out of this show. I would be doing myself and this show a disservice if I didn't produce the hell out of it.
Thank you.
Explore the space, Peach. Explore the studio space. Cal, why is it that when I watch a game where I don't have a rooting interest, okay? So I'm watching tonight, if I was watching Oklahoma City and Miami Heat, in game game five of the NBA Finals, I don't have a rooting interest. I don't hate the Heat, really, anymore. I think I would root for whoever got down or whoever's down in the series. Automatically. Why is that?
Well, there's two schools of thought, and I had a very interesting conversation with a member, a family member, an in-law, I guess, who is a big-time Yankee fan.
All right.
An unabashed Tiger Woods fan.
Wow.
Huge LeBron James fan.
Okay.
So I got to, you know, and it's something that I've always thought about
Who do you have in World War II?
Oh. The good old US of A.
Yeah.
It got me thinking because, you know, and like we always joke about the fact that we are Met fans and we are Jet fans and we are Islander fans, and why, if, you know, sometimes you don't have a choice in the matter. It's just kind of what's passed on to you. But if you do have a choice, why would you choose a team that always loses with the hope of an occasional win when you could always choose a team that always wins? And then you extrapolate that out to players. Everybody, Tiger Woods has tons of critics based on a number of things, the way he conducts himself on the course, the way he conducts himself off the course, just general backlash from all of the press that he's gotten over his career. He's got that group of people. But then he's got the other segment, and this is the argument that they'll always tell you, I root for greatness. I always want to see greatness. When I watch a sporting event, I don't care about personal issues or off-court, off-field stories. I want to see greatness, and that's what I root for. I root for Alex Rodriguez every time he plays because I want to see greatness. You know, I want LeBron. I don't care about the decision, and I don't care about the way he left Cleveland because LeBron James is the greatest player in basketball, and I root for greatness. And it's a really interesting, that's what this guy, that was his argument. He always roots for greatness. He watches the Masters. He was watching the U.S. Open. He doesn't care who's involved. If Tiger Woods is involved, he's going to root for Tiger Woods. If Tiger Woods is not involved, the golf could go F itself. So the idea is, you got two groups. You know, you got the group like us. We root for the underdog. You know, we're never going to root. If a great player happened to play for one of our teams, we're going to root for them. But if we don't have a dog in the race, we're going to root for the underdog because, and I don't mean to speak for you. So speaking for myself, if I'm watching a contest between two teams, I gravitate towards the team that might be at a disadvantage, because I feel like the upside of that team winning or that player becoming victorious or achieving whatever, I feel like the upside is greater than if I'm going to root for the greatness. Okay, yeah, they're great. And okay, the great team won or the great player did what he was supposed to. And so what's the upside there? So I wanted to bring it up tonight to kind of get your take on it, because I think you come from a similar mind as me, but also to see if you understood that kind of the parallel thinking between underdogs and greatness and why one would root for the other.
Couple things. And then I want to ask PJ about this too, because I feel like you and I could – I totally agree with you. And I feel like you and I could go on the couch here a little bit and let Dr. PJ sort of figure out why we have this mentality. Because as I said, if I don't have a dog in the fight, I am immediately rooting for the team that's either losing or at a disadvantage. Unless I hate that team.
Okay.
The perfect example of this is the Giants and the Patriots in the Super Bowl when the Patriots came in at 18-0, and the Giants are a huge underdog in that game. And I didn't know what to do.
Is that worst case scenario bowl one or two?
One.
Okay.
Right. Where the Patriots are on the verge of unparalleled greatness. So and I hate the Patriots, so I'm not going to root for that. And the Giants then are this unbelievably huge underdog who I'm going to have to listen to for the next, well, turns out only 2 years. Or only four years. Yeah. About them winning this game and beating the great Goliath that is the Patriots. So that was, that was no win scenario, bowl one, as opposed to the World Series of no win scenario, which was Yankees Phillies.
Right. Worst case scenario series.
Right. Worst case scenario series. I totally agree with you, Brian, about the idea that it's infinitely more compelling to me when the underdog does something amazing than when the great player does what he's expected to do.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but just to tie up, and it ties into what you're saying, the other argument for the rooter of greatness is that the underdog is kind of like a gimmick. And if the underdog is victorious, it kind of cheapens whatever competition is going on. Like, gosh, this thing is a farce if that guy won or if this team won. It's a fluke. It's a farce. It doesn't even count because greatness didn't come out on top.
Right.
So it's like a complete opposite of what you're saying.
Yeah, no, and you know what? That's a legitimate argument. It really is, because you look at that Patriots team in 2007 that was 18-0, and you know, Francesa actually had a caller talking about this today, and they were debating something a little different, but it was along these lines. But is that team better than the Giants from that year? You know, I mean, they were 18-0. They were utterly dominant. You know, they lost to a team that barely made the playoffs. So, but the Giants won the championship. So, I think the real problem I have here is that I like Tiger Woods. Like, I root for the underdog teams, but I like dominant individual athletes.
That's me.
You're
Tiger Woods?
In a team situation, I find that I lean towards the underdog, but if it's individuals, I like to see the big dog dominate and win. Like if it's swimming, I want to see Phelps win. I don't care about the other people in the pool getting a chance. If
That's
it's
right.
tennis, I want to see Nadal win. I like watching him dominate the court.
Yep.
You know, if it's boxing, you know, I was a little depressed when Mike Tyson lost to Buster Douglas.
Right. Yeah, I feel like there's a differentiation there for me as well with individual, as Al Capone would say, individual achievement.
This is
Robert De Niro as Al Capone said it. Does that count?
Sure.
But Cal, where do you stand on that, though? How do you feel about Tiger Woods? Like, if you're watching a golf tournament, are you rooting for Tiger Woods?
No, it carries over for me into the individual sports. Now, I think with an individual sport, there's more of an opportunity for domination, like one guy to kind of grab hold of the competition and dominate,
right?
As opposed to like in team sports. But I don't have a tennis player that I'm a fan of, or a golfer that I'm a fan of, or, you know, or a boxer. So I don't have, you know, that dog in the race that we keep talking about. So for me, it comes back to a compelling story. And for me, the more compelling story is the underdog trying to overcome the odds to be victorious, rather than the guy who's supposed to be victorious dominating like he should. That answers me. Now, I feel like I'm in the minority with all of this, just based on people that I talk to. But I can totally see you and PJ where you're coming from. I get that thinking.
I also don't think for everyone it's as black and white. You know what I mean? Like Cal, I'll give you a couple examples. Like one of your favorite teams of all time has to be the 86 Mets.
That's right.
They were dominant.
They dominated, but that's because my favorite team is the Mets. So if you go back in time, the Mets are the underdogs, and they happen to finally achieve greatness.
So they're still the underdogs.
Well, not obviously not in 86 they weren't the underdogs, but overall, as an organization, the New York Mets are an underdog organization, so that when they finally achieved it in 86, it felt better than if I had been rooting for the Yankees and had 20 championships behind me already.
Absolutely fair.
That's my opinion.
Right. The other thing I would bring up to you, or the other example I would ask you about, because you can make a great argument on both sides. Like, I think I fall somewhere in the middle. Like, I like underdog teams, but I'll give you the example. Okay, Jordan, right? Jordan in his prime. He's already dispatched with the Knicks. You know, the Knicks are out of it or whatever. And he's going for that sixth ring, and you watch him put up like 45 and 15 and 10 assists. And like, is that – are you rooting for the Jazz in that game?
Yeah, I am.
Wow.
Yeah.
I might be too, but I
– it doesn't take away from the performance, and the performance is impressive. Don't get me wrong. I'm not discounting it at all. I just wouldn't be rooting for it. I'm not behind it.
Okay.
I'm more passive with the whole thing. And
Cal was watching Michael Jordan going, "He's so great. He's not so great." Oh, whatever.
I could do better.
This again, another layup, please.
Ooh, slam dunk. Ooh, good job.
Yeah. Oh, he jumped again. Ooh.
Ooh, you're quite a jumper. Guys, I have to ask you this. If you, PJ, you come at it obviously from more of the casual sports fan than Cal and I are. You always do. So you tend to be a little more level-headed about these things. However, I think you're a bigger fan of individual sports than we are. Like,
love
I think you're, yeah, yep. I think you're a bigger tennis guy. You're a bigger golf guy. You know, especially tennis. Now, I loved tennis as a kid. I watched and McEnroe was my guy.
Oh.
You know, when we were kids, you had to pick, right? Like, you had
right.
to. Were you a Connors guy? Were you a McEnroe guy? Did you like,
right.
you know, Bjorg? Did you like Yvonne Lendl? You know,
nobody,
were you,
nobody was ever
nobody a Lendl. nobody picked Lendl.
Did you, because well, what you were saying is, if you liked Lendl, you were a communist.
Right.
I mean,
right.
it was like Lendl might as well have, you know, had the sickle and hammer on his socks. He just looked like a Soviet bloc.
Yeah, he was athlete. Like from Rocky IV. He was like Drago.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But
I must break you.
I love Federer. I love Federer.
Sure.
You know, Sampras and Agassi, I picked Agassi. I liked Agassi. You know, because Agassi was more of an underdog to me.
Right.
You know, Sampras was this machine who was dominant. Agassi was the underdog. You know, McEnroe was sort of more of an underdog to me because he was the lefty who was skinny and wasn't as powerful as these guys or as athletic, but, you know, was got away on athleticism and quickness, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Chris Everett Lloyd.
For example.
Well, in tennis, you had
right.
players who dominated so much, you would often have clashes of titans, which was
right.
awesome to watch.
Right.
Right.
It wasn't always that, like, you know, an unseeded player made it all the way to the semis, and you had a choice.
Like Jimmy Connors.
Right. But that's the thing. Like, that's what Federer always suffers from this, right? Like, Federer suffers from the fact that he didn't have his foil. He didn't have Nadal till it was too late.
Mm.
And in the prime when he was dominating, he didn't really have a dominant player to go up against.
It was the men's field was a little bit shallow for a couple of years.
But I'll tell you what, I can get behind the underdog. I can, all right, I guess I do it in individual style. I just like Tiger. I got to be honest. Like, that's the one complete non-underdog that I like.
I like
and
Tiger
you'll
Woods.
And you'll root for him then.
I like Tom Cruise movies. I don't care who knows it.
This is not like confession.
Right.
I got to be honest, I've watched Cocktail at least 25 times.
That's right.
I just said it. There. I feel better.
That's right.
It's a good movie. It's a guilty pleasure. But Cal, how do you reconcile? Okay, I'll give you another one. How do you reconcile those Islander teams? Again, dominant.
Well, you know, that's
dynasty.
All I It's all I knew. I was a kid. It's all I knew at the time.
They were also underdogs.
They weren't underdogs.
They weren't underdogs on the. They were still second class citizens.
Second class citizens, right?
Because of the Rangers.
That's right.
So, you can get away with that one.
No, but I mean, like, how do you feel about LeBron?
I have mixed. I got to be honest. When I said that before about Oak City, and if I was watching it, I'd be rooting for Oklahoma City. And are you kidding? Without
okay.
a doubt. There's no chance I'd be rooting for the Heat and LeBron James.
Now, but do you? Are you in the camp where you hope LeBron James never wins a title?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I get if that makes me Johnny Underdog, then I'm Johnny Underdog.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel too. And I find that I root against teams and individuals more than I root for teams and individuals if I don't have a team in the competition.
Right, you're rooting against something happening as opposed to.
Right, exactly. Like I'm not technically, I'm not rooting for Oklahoma City to win the title. What I'm rooting is I'm rooting against LeBron James to win a title.
Right.
You
know, I got gotcha.
I don't know.
I got another one for you. And the Olympics clearly poses like this is like a big, like I like the favorites in the, I wanted to see Phelps win 27 medals.
Right.
Because that's a twofold there. And I don't care that he's not the underdog. I don't care that he's the favorite. I want to see him make history.
See, for me, with the Olympics is different only in the fact that that's where my nationalism comes in. And
right.
I'll root for the United States in everything.
Right. Your patriotism comes in. Right.
Right. Regardless of whether they're dominant or not, it's just I'm rooting for the United States because that's...
Yeah, I get that there's...
Unless it's a country with only one athlete in one event, and then you start like, oh, come on. Come on.
Give it to Belarus.
The guy from Belarus is here. Let him go.
Wow, we both picked Belarus. What are the odds of that? Come on. Let the Belarus guy win. Come on. You know.
At least qualify. Let him finish high in the qualifiers so he gets to the medal round.
Our skeet shooter has like 5 medals already. Like,
right.
The javelin thrower from Georgia.
That's right.
Come on.
The guy's got to go back to Georgia in Russia. You know, let's give him a little something nice. You know, I tend to get behind the Aussie athletes. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Again, I'm always rooting for the United States.
I love the Olympics. My God. Love it. Love it.
Well, we're going to do that. We're going to do that other fun load in a couple of weeks. That's a really good one.
I'm going to see if I can get Summer Sanders to call in.
Wow.
And now here comes the question. Who the hell is Summer Sanders, right?
No, we know
who Summer Sanders is. Oh, we know
Summer
who Sanders is.
All right.
Yeah. That would be some get.
That'd be
well,
huge.
She's been around. And she was, that's
you
not
probably
what I mean.
You shouldn't, first of all, rephrase that.
She's been seen in the building.
You probably shouldn't disparage her. Here on the show.
Oh, that's Summer Sanders. Ooh. she was the host for a number of years of U.S. Olympic Gold, the U.S. Olympic Committee's show, which they...
I remember working on that myself.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
Oh, that's right. That's going back
a
few years.
I want to say for the 2004 Olympics, probably.
Yeah.
She also replaced Willow Bay as co-host with Ahmad Rashad on the NBA Inside Stuff program, your weekly wrap-up of the NBA.
That's where she went after the Olympic. The Olympic people kind of dumped her unceremoniously.
And then after that, she wound up toiling on a Nickelodeon game show, Figure It Out.
Wow. Somebody's been following Summer Sanders' career way too closely.
But
she's
an Olympic medalist also. We could also put that on her resume.
We should probably lead with that.
Right. Olympic swimmer, medalist.
No Janet Evans, but...
Well, who is, really? Who? No, who is? really. Who's Janet Evans?
Jenny Thompson.
See what I did there? No,
Gail
seriously.
Devers. Do any of these names mean anything to you, the people?
Gail Devers was a runner.
Gail Devers was a hurdler, was she not? Or was she a
sprinter? Yes.
Didn't she
no,
have
very good. Super
also?
Hurdler.
She had what?
Graves' disease.
Graves' disease, correct.
Yeah.
Wow. So she's not with us anymore.
No, she is.
She is.
Oh, so I just
Flo-Jo.
Killed off.
We lost Flo-Jo. We didn't.
That's right. I just killed off Gail Devers. That's a good
no,
question.
It's not a deadly disease, I don't think. It just sounds like it is.
It sounds awful.
Yeah. No, it's a thyroid condition where you take right. thyroid pills forever.
Well, that sounds like fun.
How about the old hammer thrower, Al Order?
See, you know your Olympians.
I know my Olympians.
Al.
Do you remember Dan and Dan?
Dan and Dan. Well,
Dan Jansen, Dan O'Brien?
The greatest, largest failed advertising campaign.
Dave Johnson. Dave Johnson, Dan O'Brien.
Dave Johnson, Dan O'Brien, yes. Dan and Dave. And that was Reebok, right?
1992.
Yeah.
The Barcelona Olympics.
The Barcelona Olympics.
Dave and Dan.
Did you guys all say Barcelona?
Barcelona.
When it was there? Did you? Because I did.
That's how you say it.
That's how you say it.
Luganus.
Luganus is, come on, that's a household name.
We can wax poetic about the Olympics forever.
And we will in just a couple of weeks. But I want to end with this. I want to end this fun load with this, and then we can end the show. Cal, who is your favorite underdog team of all time?
My favorite underdog team of all time?
Now, considering that you and I, for the teams that we root for, we have 4 Stanley Cups with the Islanders.
Right.
1 World Championship with the Mets that we've seen in our lifetime.
And that's it. That's all we got. So it's got to be a team. It's got to be. Because when the Mets won the World Series,
They
were not an underdog.
And the Islanders were one of the most dominant dynasties in the history of professional sports.
I will tell you, my favorite, it sounds strange, my favorite underdog team of all time were the 2001 Arizona Diamondbacks.
So it's not a Met team.
Not a Met team. Well, I was talking about a team that's won a championship.
Oh, okay. Let's do that. Okay, good. Good.
Team that's won a championship, 2001
yep.
Arizona Diamondbacks, and by proxy, not because I was a huge fan of the Diamondbacks, but because I wanted the Yankees to lose so badly.
Yep.
Because it was the end of that run.
Yep. And we were also, I have been called I was called at the time and have been called since a non-patriot.
Right.
A non-New Yorker.
Right.
And a sellout and a traitor because I was rooting against the Yankees in that World Series.
Can I give you my alternate take on that? And I wonder if you have the same feeling. Rooting that hard against the Yankees was actually made me feel like I was back into sports. No, I'm serious. Because
from 9/11, you mean?
From 9/11, because I mean you have the Piazza thing, which was like hugely emotional, but I still didn't really feel like I was. Back in and back at that level that I was before 9/11.
Yep.
And then when that World Series came and I was rooting so hard against the Yankees because I could not bear to see them win again, I felt like, wow, now I'm back, you know?
Yep. I'm with you.
So.
I absolutely can totally relate to that and agree. I would not put them as my favorite underdog team of all time. That's won a championship, but that's a fan and not one of our teams, obviously.
What is your favorite?
That's a tough one.
Underdog team of all time that's won a championship.
Yeah, that's won a championship. I mean, we really got to go back you know what? I'll give you this one. I have since come
to USA hockey team.
Yeah, well. But I was 7, so I can't qualify it. I don't know if I can. I've come to sort of hate this team since then. but the 04 Red Sox was with the comeback from 3-0 against the Yankees, and then beating who did they beat?
They beat the Cardinals.
The Cardinals? No, that was the second one.
In 2004?
2004, they beat the Cardinals?
They beat the Cardinals. They beat the Rockies in 2007.
2000, okay. Is that right?
Yeah, because 2007 was that crazy run for the Rockies.
Yeah, where they won like 22 or 24.
Right.
Yes, but I like that underdog Red Sox team with the idiots and the Johnny Damon and the, you know, Millar. And I've since come to really dislike that team.
Mm-hmm.
But that year, that vintage coming back from 03 against the Yankees and Manny and Big Poppy and, you know, the only guy I really always hated on that team was Schilling.
Yeah.
But Pedro on that team, and that was – I like that underdog team a lot. There's probably a hockey team in there that I like more.
I'm trying to think of a football team that won the Super Bowl.
I just hate everybody that wins the Super Bowl. I hate it.
You can't get past it.
I hate it. They're all ruining everything that I want.
That's true.
How about you, PJ? Who's your favorite underdog team of all time?
Or player, or individual.
Or individual, yes.
The underdog team that tore me to pieces and broke my heart was the Buffalo Bills the year before their four Super Bowls, when they came out of nowhere and ended up losing to the Browns in a heartbreak. Was it 1990?
90, it had to be.
Yeah.
Had to be. Yeah.
That was one of those where, you know, you thought you had found the the story.
Right.
The underdog team. They were going to do it. Watch how they tear this up.
You have a cute little soft spot for the Bills. It's cute.
I love the Bills.
I know you do. It's adorable. Look at you. You're adorable. All right, well, we have gone 12 minutes over, gentlemen, so let's wrap this up. All right? That's it. Wrap it up.
Jeez. Very strict.
PJ, final unload.
Final unload. Diablo 3, a sword and sorcery game that is a life eater, apparently can be beaten within a month. So check back with me in a month, because I just got it and I just installed it. Bye.
Cal, final unload.
I want to say thank you to R.A. Dickey for providing me with one of the most unexpected, enjoyable stories of my Met fan life, and I hope it continues, but even if it doesn't, I've really been grateful for what I've gotten so far, and it's been a great ride so far. Hope it continues. Thank you, R.A. Dickey.
All right, and my final unload is the NHL draft is tomorrow night. Our beloved New York Islanders have the number 4 overall pick. I am excited to see what Garth Snow is going to do for the Isles. We are in year 4 of this rebuild and actually starting to see some dividends. And I think hopefully the Islanders get a good defenseman or whatever. But whatever they do, do not trade Nino. Keep El Nino. He's going to be good.
Trade down.
And I'm sort of excited about the NHL draft, Cal. I'll be honest with you.
Well, you'll have to keep tabs of it from City Field.
Yes, I will. I installed the NHL Draft app.
Of course.
Because I'm a junkie. All right, that's all the time we have. Join us next week. We're probably going to have a guest, maybe even Summer Sanders, maybe even Greg Louganis. Who knows? Anything could happen. Thanks very much. Good night.